You're listening to the CamCam Books podcast with your hosts, Cameron and Tricia McManus.
Thanks for tuning in to the CamCam Books podcast. This is episode 9 in season 2, and we're covering Canto 19.
The Dante Daily is, don't sell what is priceless.
Canto 19. O Simon Magus, O forlorn disciples, ye who the things of God which ought to be, the brides of holiness, rapaciously, for silver and for gold do prostitute, now it behoves for you the trumpet sound, because in this third bulgia ye abide.
We're now in the third bulgia, that's the third trench in the circle of fraud. Here we encounter a large number of popes who've committed the sin of simony. That is to say that they have sold church positions, offices, basically they've accepted bribes for spiritual things. Simony is called after Simon Magus, whom Dante mentions there. Simon Magus was a sorcerer convert to Christianity who tried to bribe the apostles into giving him the power of miracles.
We had already on the following tomb ascended to that portion of the crag, which o'er the middle of the moat hangs plumb. Wisdom supreme, O how great art thou showest in heaven, in earth, and in the evil world. And with what justice doth thy power distribute?
This is a stunning statement, and it's very hard for the modern mind to swallow. Dante, very much referencing Psalms, talking about how great thou art, says that hell, just as well as earth and heaven, reflects God's glory, because in hell we see God's justice. That's a bold statement. Dante's saying that our correct response to some of what we're seeing in the Inferno should be a kind of joy akin to the joy that we see at a sunset or at a waterfall, because God's justice is just as beautiful as his mercy, his creative power, and anything else.
I saw upon the sides and on the bottom the livid stone with perforations filled, all of one size, and every one was round. To me less ample seemed they not, nor greater than those that in my beautiful St. John are fashioned for the place of the baptizers. And one of which, not many years ago, I broke for someone who was drowning in it. Be this a seal all men to undeceive.
What Dante sees here look like, to him, baptismal fonts. Apparently, in his city of St. John, the fonts there are deep enough for men to drown in. He mentions a time that he had to break the wall of one to get somebody out who'd fallen in.
Out of the mouth of each one, there protruded the feet of a transgressor, and the legs, up to the calf, the rest within remained. In all of them the souls were both on fire, wherefore the joints so violently quivered, they would have snapped asunder withes and bands. Even as the flame of unctuous things is wont to move upon the outer surface only, so likewise was it there from heel to point.
So the fate of those who commit the sin of simony, who are selling the sacraments, basically, is to be upside down in baptismal fonts that are full of fire. What is Dante getting at with this? Essentially, what he seems to be saying is this. What these people have willed for all eternity is to turn the sacraments into something they're not, to fraudulently make them into something that can be sold. But because these people are themselves baptized, that's something within their very soul that they're rejecting. So the idea of the baptism turned upside down and being an eternal flame harming the person seems to symbolize a kind of eternal spiritual conflict such that they cannot bear the real baptism because what they prefer is the fake baptism in their minds.
Master, who is that one who writhes himself more than his other comrades quivering? I said, and whom a redder flame is sucking. And he to me, if thou wilt have me bear thee down there along that bank which lowest lies, from him thou'lt know his errors and himself. And I, what pleases thee to me is pleasing, Thou art my Lord, and knowest that I depart not from thy desire, and knowest what is not spoken. Straightway upon the fourth dyke we arrived. We turned, and on the left-hand side descended, down to the bottom full of holes and narrow. And the good master yet from off his haunch deposed me not, till to the hole he brought me, of him who so lamented with his shanks. Whoe'er thou art that standest upside down, O doleful soul, implanted like a stake, to say began I, if thou canst speak out. I stood even as the friar who is confessing the false assassin, who, when he is fixed, recalls him, so that death may be delayed.
Dante and Virgil have here descended down to one of these baptismal fonts to talk to one of the souls in there. Dante, interestingly, likens himself to a friar who's giving a condemned assassin, so someone who's going to be hanged, his final confession, and then to delay the execution, you know, when it's time, calls the guy back to make it a longer confession so that he won't have to be killed quite so soon. It's going to help us in the next few lines if we know in advance who a couple of the people we're going to hear about are. So the man Dante is talking to is Pope Nicholas III. Dante doesn't like him because he sees him as a big-time simoniac. Nicholas is going to think that Dante is Boniface. This is the current pope. The reason that Dante kind of pre-damns the pope of his day is that although Dante the character is not yet exiled, the real Dante is, and he, perhaps rightly, perhaps wrongly, blames Boniface for this.
And he cried out, "Dost thou stand there already? Dost thou stand there already, Boniface? By many years the record lied to me. Art thou so early satiate with that wealth, for which thou didst not fear to take by fraud the beautiful lady, and then work her woe? Such I became as people are who stand, not comprehending what is answered them, as if bemocked, and know not how to answer." Then said Virgilius, "Say to him straightway, I am not he, I am not he thou thinkest." And I replied, as was imposed on me. Whereat the spirit writhed with both his feet, then sighing with a voice of lamentation, said to me, "Then what wantest thou of me, if who I am thou carest so much to know, that thou on that account hast crossed the bank? Know that I vested was with the great mantle, and truly was I son of the she-bear, so eager to advance the cubs that wealth above and here myself I pocketed. Beneath my head the others are dragged down, who have preceded me in simony, flattened along the fissure of the rock. Below there I shall likewise fall, whenever that one shall come who I believe thou wast, what time the sudden question I proposed."
What Nicholas III is saying here is that this font seems to be for popes in particular. When Boniface dies and comes here, so Nicholas says, he's going to push Nicholas a little further down into the fire, and then Boniface will have his feet sticking out. And then in what follows, Nicholas is going to describe the next pope yet to come. Now, this will all sound very impressive, but remember, when the real Dante is actually writing this, Boniface is already dead, and the successor to Boniface is already doing the things that Nicholas predicts.
"But longer I my feet already toast, and here have been in this way upside down than he will planted stay with reddened feet. For after him shall come a fouler deed, from towards the west a pastor without law, such as befits to cover him and me. New Jason will he be, of whom we read in Maccabees, and as his king was pliant, so he who governs France shall be to this one."
So this new pastor that he's referring to is Clement V. Clement is notorious for having been so close with the King of France that he actually moved the papacy to Avignon, and this causes an enormous crisis in the church in this century. He compares him to Jason. This is not Jason from Greek mythology, but from the Book of Maccabees. Jason, after the pagan king Antiochus IV took over and sort of forced the Jews to become kind of half Jewish and half pagan, he basically bought the position of high priest from the king.
I do not know if I were here too bold, that him I answered only in this meter. I pray thee tell me now how great a treasure. Our Lord demanded of St. Peter first, before he put the keys into his keeping. Truly he nothing asked but follow me.
Dante will here launch into a long and somewhat sarcastic speech about the corruption in the church. He's going to start by asking Nicholas, well, you know, how much did our Lord charge St. Peter to give him the keys of the kingdom? Nothing. And then he's going to mention other things and say, oh, and how much did this guy pay for that? So he's really doubling down on our Dante Daily. Don't sell what is priceless. But the way to really understand what's happening here is that Dante, the author, is not that interested in just castigating these historical figures. In the 14th century, this is the most common complaint of literary people against the clergy, that they're greedy, that they're using this as a means of enriching themselves, and it causes real problems. The Protestant Revolution comes pretty shortly after this, and this certainly played a role. So understand as you listen to the speech, this is really meant to be heard by the current clerics of Dante's day. It's not just for these past figures.
Nor Peter nor the rest asked of Matthias silver or gold when he by lot was chosen unto the place the guilty soul had lost. Therefore stay here. Thou art justly punished, and keep safeguard o'er the ill-gotten money, which caused thee to be valiant against Charles. And were it not that still forbids it me, the reverence for the key superlative, thou hadst in keeping in the gladsome life, I would make use of the words more grievous still, because your avarice afflicts the world, trampling the good and lifting the depraved. The evangelist your pastors had in mind, when she who sitteth upon many waters to fornicate with kings by him was seen, the same who with the seven heads was born, and power and strength from 10 horns received, so long as virtue to her spouse was pleasing.
Dante's referring here to two figures in the Book of Revelation. There's the harlot, and then there is the many-headed beast. Dante's saying that his interpretation is that what St. John meant by these figures was corrupt prelates like Nicholas and like these other simoniacs.
Ye have made yourselves a god of gold and silver, and from the idolater how differ ye, save that he one and ye 100 worship. O Constantine, of how much ill was mother, not thy conversion, but that marriage dower, which the first wealthy father took from thee.
This last bit refers to a medieval legend about Constantine. So Constantine was baptized by Pope Saint Sylvester I, and so the story goes, in gratitude, he donated to Sylvester the lands of the western part of the Roman Empire. This is a big idea in medieval politics. What Dante is getting at here is that although it was a great thing that Constantine converted, it was not such a great thing that he gave a financial gift to the Pope, because this begot the clerical greed that he sees ravaging the world now.
And while I sang to him such notes as these, either that anger or that conscience stung him, he struggled violently with both his feet. I think in sooth that in my leader pleased, with such contented lip he listened ever, unto the sound of the true words expressed. Therefore, with both arms he took me up, and when he had me all upon his breast, remounted by the way where he descended.
So Virgil liked that speech so much that he picks Dante up, gives him a big hug, and as we'll see, carries him like that to the next trench.
Nor did he tire to have me clasped to him, but bore me to the summit of the arch, which from the fourth dyke to the fifth is passage. There tenderly he laid his burden down, tenderly on the crag, uneven and steep, that would have been hard passage for the goats. Thence was unveiled to me another valley.
Okay, you said the Dante Daily is don't sell what is priceless. And when we were preparing for this podcast, I had asked you, what does that mean? And you had mentioned that this is regarding clergy who would have committed fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that fit?
Well, the idea here is that, I mean, it would be very nice if some of our listeners were members of the clergy, but we would misunderstand this canto if we think that it's only directed at the clergy members and this is only something relevant to them. Because the real point is that anyone, regardless of your vocation, regardless of your walk of life, does have an opportunity to exchange for money things that should not be exchanged for money. Now, there are some obvious examples that we can think of that perhaps we won't mention in explicit terms because we may have little ears in the other room, and we don't necessarily want them to ask mommy and daddy what some of these words are. But I think you can also think more broadly about, do you have a price? Are you willing to do things that you would otherwise find disgraceful if there was a high enough dollar amount attached to it? So I'll give an example that I actually sometimes use with students. It's a sort of ethical dilemma that I ask them to think about as a thought experiment. They say, imagine that you are walking through the park and you see an old man sitting on a bench across the way. And another man approaches you, has a suitcase full of cash, shows it to you, says, I've got $10 million in here. So all you need to do is walk over to that old man, scream in his face, I hate you. Don't say anything else to him. Just come right back here. And if you do that, I'll give you the $10 million. But if you do anything else, if you tell him I'm sorry, if you say anything else before you come get the money, it doesn't go through. So I asked students, would they be willing to do this or not? It's something to ask yourself about, because we often say, oh, sure, I don't have a price. You know, not everything is about money for me. But what you really want to ask yourself is, what am I not willing to do for $10 million?
Here's the interesting thing, because when you were first telling that example or that, you know, giving that idea of would you be willing to do this, The first thing I thought was, you're putting yourself in a position, you don't get to say I'm sorry or explain yourself, and You walk away. In the end, it's more about what you have now presented yourself to be to a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And is that worth the dollar amount?
And that is precisely really the point of the Inferno, right? In a previous episode, we had a Dante Daily that, you know, sin harms the sinner more than anyone else. That's especially true here. Dante's not saying, you know, stop simony because it's causing so much harm. I mean, he does say that. But really, the main harm is to the souls of the people that commit it, right? They've done something to themselves where now in their eternity, the fact that they are baptized is eternally a torture to them. They are trying to separate themselves from it or change it. That's what that burning is in this canto. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's really the point. Sure, you'll have $10 million, but you'll also have become the kind of person who will scream at an old man for $10
million. Right. You've sold yourself. I think of the man who got screamed at, He will recover, you know, he will move on from what happened, but in his mind, and anyone who witnessed it will say, that was a strange woman. And If they see it, oh, that was that woman who screamed in that old man's face.
Mm-hmm. And then you sold your reputation, which should be priceless, but You put a dollar amount on it. Another useful story, I think, to demonstrate the idea, because I don't want to start trying to guess what it is our listeners might be tempted to sell. You've got to kind of take this to your own examination of conscience. But this is just a good story. I'm going to use a euphemism because it's not an entirely appropriate story for little ears. But the story goes that Winston Churchill was at a party, and he came up to a young, very, you know, fancy, well-to-do woman, and he said to her, Madam, would you, and he asked her to do something that a woman should not do, for $1 million. And then the woman said, well, Mr. Churchill, I mean, we would have to discuss terms and, you know, figure things out. And then he said, well, would you do that for a dollar? And then she says, Mr. Churchill, what kind of a woman do you think I am? And then he replied with, we've already established that, madam. Now we are merely haggling about the price.
Wow. That she would do it at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The kind of woman that she is.
And my guess is that it was, if this is a true story, a lot of Churchill anecdotes are apocryphal. But if it is a true story, he probably asked it for the purpose of making the point.
That point, yeah. Wow. That's very interesting. So can I ask, in what context then, if it's appropriate to mention here, knowing that there may be little listeners, in what context are these clergy committing this fraud? Is it kind of the same as this example with Churchill or something else? Because I had thought they were stealing money from collection, or they were, you know, selling, like it says they're selling
offices and so on. That's a very good question, actually, which I should have clarified before. So we have to understand that the medieval church had much more influence on worldly affairs than it does now. The reason for that is basically that it could serve as a kind of like neutral referee or arbiter between Catholic countries. Because the idea is that, you know, two Catholic countries, if they have a conflict, they are at least ostensibly both loyal to the church. So the church, ostensibly, is a neutral third party that just favors goodness and doesn't particularly favor France over some other country. And the idea is that then they can sometimes step in to solve these conflicts. This is why some popes were able to be quasi-politicians, and it's why being a bishop was something people were willing to pay for. Right? I mean, now the idea that you would bribe someone to become a bishop, it sounds odd. We're like, but why would anyone care about being bishop except someone who kind of, you know, already cared about this kind of stuff? But in the medieval world, the church had this is a really twisted and stretched analogy, but I would say in a very dim way, it was analogous to like the United Nations in terms of the influence it could have on affairs of other countries. Except perhaps more so. Frankly, the United Nations does not really have a whole lot of influence. It just officially has it on paper. Bishops and popes really did have influence. Like the Boniface that Dante so dislikes, he really was a shrewd statesman. That is a really good way to describe him. And if that seems a really odd phrase to apply to a pope, this century was very different from our own.
Thinking back on that example with Churchill, the equivalent of that today is websites like OnlyFans or photography, where you basically, if you don't know what that is, you basically take pictures of yourself in interesting situations, let's say, and now you are making tons of money because people are buying that off the internet.
Yeah, that's one of the...
And it's like, this is more than just those magazines that, you know, this is not like you have to get someone to hire you. You can just self do this and you have an account and you put yourself out there and it's so accessible.
Yeah, it's dangerous. Mean, yeah. OnlyFans, I have to imagine that they knew what it was going in. Ostensibly, it started out as just, you know, a social media page that would only be accessible to subscribers, and they just left it that way. But it went exactly where you can expect. Yeah. I mean, now we live in a world where it's never been easier and more lucrative to do this. Because just as you say, you don't even really have to talk to anyone else. Yeah. No one else has to know about it. There's no director, middleman. You just start putting the things up.
It's like the Craigslist of that sort of content. Don't look it up.
No, really don't.
Don't search it. Just trust us when we say it's insidious. It's just awful.
So this is something to be aware of, especially because, as you can expect, you know, they get young children, right? I mean, it's social media. It's cool. It's new. An algorithm recommends it. Yeah. A little ad in the sidebar.
And it's sad that young people, a lot of young, I'm talking like middle school, know when someone makes a reference to OnlyFans, they know exactly what that is.
I also want to talk about for the grown-ups, because naturally this is a big danger for younger people, but I have to imagine that.
Well, it's tempting.
Yeah, it's tempting.
It's tempting because it's like, oh, well, you know, if I just put this, you know, this this could be my bar, right? So that here's Chesterton giving that example to that woman saying, well, for this much, you know, and then maybe you only have to do this much of putting yourself out there. And, you know, the trade-off is you make this much money.
Yeah. And I think the thing, too, to understand is that a lot of us feel like, well, I'd never be tempted to do such a thing. Mm-hmm. But ask yourself, is that because my financial situation is kind of okay? It's one thing to say I would never be tempted to do this to pay off a credit card early. Right. But would you be tempted to do it if it was the difference between being evicted and not being evicted? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's how a lot of people in all ages of history have sold what they should not sell. It was precisely because they were trying to avoid some catastrophe.
Can I just take it somewhere? Because you're making me think about, I was at this workshop last weekend, and we were going over the commandments. And the seventh commandment, surprisingly, there were so many comments and questions and different cases that came up. And one of the cases was, you know, the seventh commandment is thou shalt not steal. Mm-hmm. In the case of unable to pay whatsoever, and you are dying of starvation.
So yeah, okay, that's actually worth talking about. I think first, this is very apropos, because the real thing that is wrong with selling what's priceless is that you're actually selling something you don't really own.
Right.
I mean, I think that's actually what's going on with the clerics in this passage. They actually, this is God's stuff that they're selling, right? Okay. So that's, but yeah, in terms of stealing, I think it's important to note Thomas Aquinas is really helpful on this and actually gives us some stuff that will be useful later in this book. So the best way to understand it is to start by asking what exactly are property rights. For St. Thomas Aquinas, they're more like property authority. So I'll explain it this way. You and I own a car. Actually, we own a couple of cars. Mm-hmm. What that means is that the two of us actually have authority over all other people, including the president, but the jurisdiction of that authority is the car. So we get to decide who may drive the car and who may not drive the car.
Regarding the car.
And we can be, we don't have to give a good reason. We don't have to convince people. If we're giving someone a ride and we say, I don't want to give you a ride anymore, get out, we don't have to have a good reason, and they still have an obligation to get out of the car because it's our car and not theirs. And that would be true even if we were giving Joe Biden a ride, right? We would still have to say, nope, sorry, Joe, get out of the car. That's the end of it. And we might be being awful about it, but that's what, for Thomas, that's what he means by owning something. So you have the authority to command other people with respect to this object. Okay. Here's the point.
Drive it home. Drive this
car
home.
But this is precisely the point. Okay. All authority has limits, right? Mm-hmm. So that to him is why a starving person can take food that doesn't belong to them. And this is key. He would say that stealing is inherently immoral and you may never do it. But a starving person taking food, even though the owner of the food doesn't want them to, in Thomas's mind, is not stealing, because you don't have the authority to command someone to die with respect to your property.
Okay, so the baker has authority over all his bread, except in the case of someone, except in the case of that person about to die.
Yeah.
Like, so for that baker to withhold that bread from that starving person, he would then be culpable of causing that person to die.
Yeah. Or, frankly, going back to our car, let's say that we left the keys in the car and someone is running for their life. They, in St. Thomas's mind, are not stealing our car if they hop into the car and drive away with it in order to escape like a murderer. Because the idea is that although we have authority over the car, that authority does not extend to being able to tell people, no, even if you need this car to live, you have to just die, because that's how our authority works.
You know, you've just excused every action movie I've ever watched and gone, how do they get away with this? How are they still a cop? How are they, you know, how are the superheroes still loved? Like, all these cars they've destroyed.
Yes. I mean, and again,
they're running for their lives.
Okay. There are limits the other way. But I think, honestly, probably this principle is recognized to some extent under law, right? I don't think, for example, that if you grab a nearby fire extinguisher to defend yourself from an attacker, I don't think someone can charge you with stealing their fire extinguisher in that situation. I mean, you would hope people would have the decency not to. But I think legally you are allowed to just use what you need in sight to not die if you're in mortal danger.
You're very brave to quote that and not be absolutely sure. I don't know that if that's necessarily... I feel like there are so many different lawsuits in America that are upside down and backwards.
Yes.
And people get, you know, like...
I mean, I guess I would put it this way. At the end of the day, even if that is against the law, presumably it's not a capital crime, so you're better off... You're better off either way, right? You know, prison is better than being killed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think maybe in moral law,
yeah,
we're safe there.
Yeah, well, and I think that would be Thomas's point.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's very much, regardless of what the civil law is, he's saying this is the moral law, so this is how you ought to act morally. That is his idea.
Okay.
So with that in mind, yeah, the idea, I guess, actually, this is kind of where you get into interesting things, because when you sell things that you ought not to sell, you end up asserting these kind of false property rights and authority. I mean, let's put it this way. When people are selling themselves, right? A certain authority is being asserted there over a person as though they're a car or an inanimate object. I mean, this, you know, without getting into brass tacks, I mean, actually, a really good example of this outside of the obvious realm, Pope Francis has recently condemned surrogacy, right? I mean, that is a straight up example of it. And very frequently, these cases have descended into really what looks like actual slavery, where, for example, if the woman should say, for example, has twins, and the couple doesn't want twins, there have been cases where there was an attempt to force the woman to do something about the unwanted twin.
Yeah.
So suddenly this was not just a nice little...
that one to exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the woman doesn't want to do it, but then they go to court to kind of make her. That sounds an awful lot like slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really a key. Wow, so there's so many different examples here.
Mm-hmm.
Property.
Yeah.
Your personal self.
Mm-hmm.
Your service, you know, this, I'm thinking of the surrogacy in a way as the service, which is essentially a slavery.
Mm-hmm.
What other examples are there of this fraud?
This sort of selling which should not be sold. There is one more example. I think that what will help us connect with this is when we understand that money is not the only form of wealth. It's not the only thing that you can trade. Let's put it this way. Why in the 14th century were people willing to pay bribes to become bishops? Because bishops did not get to be very rich as such. They were getting influence. That was the value of being a bishop. If you were going to be this worldly-minded sort of bribe-based bishop, it got you influence. Now, this is a question to ask yourself. Am I willing to sell what is priceless for influence? Take that examination of conscience to your social media page. Am I willing to say...
It's actually kind of creepy because people on social media are known as influencers.
Influencers, indeed, right?
Okay.
So I would consider, like, are there things that really shouldn't be filmed that you're willing to put on social media because it would get a lot of likes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think of how there's so many videos out there now with, look at me, I'm giving money to this woman at Walmart, or I'm at the dollar store and I'll tell this person I'll buy whatever you want, or here I am giving all these free meals to these people. I, you know, and they're making, these people are making money filming that. And in the name of saying, well, I'm making money, but I'm giving it back.
Indeed, but it's...
But how much more are they keeping?
It's harder to think of a better example of what our Lord is talking about when he says, amen, I say to you, they have already received their reward.
Yeah, and you know what's so funny? I think it was Jim Carrey made a video about people who film their good deeds, and he said, stop. Just stop. Think about being the person on the other side, receiving that, and that's filmed for everybody to see, and them accepting that. And he said, better yet, go do those, but don't film yourself.
Yeah.
Do those things, but don't film it.
You know, that makes me think, too, there's quite a lot of things on social media. Certainly there's videos like this, right, where the person is humiliated, but perhaps... thoughtlessly.
Willing to.
Right?
Or sorry, but willing to.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, oh, you're giving me this, but you're going to film me? Oh, yeah, okay, sure, fine.
But think also, we live in a time now where if you have, let's say, a meltdown in public,
Oh, my goodness.
Someone nearby is going to sell that, the yeah. sort of thing that should not be sold, this person's reputation, dignity, and all of that, because not for money, not for a suitcase full of cash, because it will get them more likes on Instagram. My gosh, I'm just realizing now. The thought experiment I have about screaming in an old man's face, I hate you. Let's be real. There are some quote-unquote prank Instagram pages and mm-hmm. TikTok pages that kind of just are that. And no one's offering them a suitcase full of cash. Yeah. They're just clicking like on their videos.
Mm-hmm. I used to really enjoy, when I was younger, there was this show. I can't remember what it's called. But basically, it was just clips of someone being pranked with the same prank over and over again. And just different people walking by or, like, you know, pretending there was a porta potty, and then suddenly they cover the porta potty and they put a whole boardroom inside. Or they, you know, there'd be a little boy walking a dog and he'd fall in a hole and mm-hmm. see how people would react. And I really enjoyed watching it because a lot of the times, at least what they chose to air, mm-hmm. was a very positive interaction. Mm-hmm. But looking back, if it were me, I'd be really upset. Mm-hmm. To see some kid fall down a hole and then I go dive in or, you know, try and help them. I don't think I'd just bounce back and start laughing, especially now having my own kids. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't get aired because they wouldn't want to air someone get upset about their prank.
That's very interesting. I wonder what this show was. But yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you see it on the airplanes now. What is it? Like Just for Laughs?
Oh, the Just for Laughs. Is that what yes. it is? Yeah. Well, that it's certainly like that. Yeah. But that's interesting because we often don't, you know, we just imagine that what we're seeing is just what it was, but we don't often imagine.
It was probably really lovely. But then, okay, so then take the example of today where we see a lot of people filming themselves doing good deeds. How many times do these people get rejected? And they never post those.
Yeah, true. Actually, one other thing that has occurred to me. There's some chatter now about the possibility of having actors who are long dead sort of resurrected via AI, in that we could just have them in movies now forever, because we've got enough material already that they can just continue making movies for us for all eternity. Now, I don't pretend to have thought about this issue long enough to know exactly whether it's right or wrong, but if it's wrong, I think it would be an example of selling something that you shouldn't sell, right? The idea, because the thing is, it's not Humphrey Bogart selling this. It's presumably Humphrey Bogart's family or whoever would have the rights at this point to his likeness, basically saying that, yes, you can, you know, make kind of a ghost of my granddad and just have him be in movies forever. Now, it's a hard one to say because we're listening.
I mean,
you
we've
might
already
say,
started.
Yeah, right? It's always, they're already.
Star Wars with three different characters, right?
Exactly.
That's a lot.
And they've not gone as far as having them be like the main character in a movie, but the technology will get there. Now, there's arguments on both sides. You could say, but is this much different than making a painting or a cartoon of someone who's long passed? Mm. And I can see that argument. But what I will say is this. It's not that we have had the argument and that side has won and we've decided, no, this is okay. This is morally all right. It's really just a fancy painting. What has happened is we're not bothering to have the conversation at all. And we're just saying, well, this way makes us more money, so we're going to do it. And this is the kind of thinking that we need to avoid if we don't want to fall into that trap of selling what shouldn't be sold. You don't want to just see the dollar signs and say, well, I can very easily see the tangible, countable benefit, whether it's likes or whether it's dollars, and the cost is invisible. Like, I can't really quantify it. Be very careful. Things that you can't quantify are often priceless, not valueless.
Ethics question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, do you have a song for this?
I do. I rarely have a song so perfect. Oh. Now, I could almost play the whole thing, but there might be little ears, so I have picked a section of it that's more or less appropriate. The song is The American Dream from Miss Saigon.
Okay.
The context is that this character has been engaged in, shall we say, selling human beings for a long time in Saigon. And he dreams...
He's the pimp.
Yes, he's the pimp. Okay, he's the pimp. And he dreams about going to America where he can finally crown Miss Chinatown. And this is the big thing for him. America is so great because not only can he sell Miss Chinatown as he sold Miss Saigon, but he can sell her via usury, because in America they've got credit cards. Mm. So we'll see the song here. It has a lot of positive American Dream imagery mixed with not so positive.
Okay, here it is.
It's time we all entertain my American dream. Us boys in my hotel, the American dream. Wall Street is ready to sell.
Okay, I think of how this looks practically, because we're living in America now,
mm-hmm.
and there are many times where I'm like, wow, there's so much we can do here. There's so mm-hmm. many opportunities. There's so many more companies competing against each mm-hmm. other. Unlike in Canada, there's only a few. You know, we've only got one insurance company in BC. Here, there's like 1,000. We were just trying to get new insurance for our car. And we've been phone calls and text messages like mm-hmm. all day long from different companies. I'm like, wow, you really can, you know, find different opportunities, different options. You can be savvy. But then there's also this, hang on, let me slow down. Let me think about what is ethical. What is the mm-hmm. right kind of savvy? What is going to be sustainable and just?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all coming at us so fast, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, the song captures that, because some of those images are quite positive, right? Bus boys can buy the hotel. Sure, why not,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But come and make a life out of thin air, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So make money for, sell nothing. Just make money.
Yeah.
You know, come and get more than your share.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it culminates
Gluttony.
Yeah, his path is to sell Miss Chinatown for 10% down.
Yeah.
And that's going to be his... Yeah, it's a great song that way, and it's long. I strongly recommend listening to it.
There's so many examples.
Oh, he juxtaposes on stage every night Fred Astaire to cars that have bars take you there.
Yeah.
Right? The sort of... What he loves about America is not just that it's a land of opportunity, but it's a land where you can sell absolutely anything.
Yeah.
And that is...
Well, that's a great show.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are some scenes in it that
yes.
are like, ah, you know, kind of have to look away. But
it's a show for the grown-ups, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I just think of how it, in the end, gives you the fall of all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for him, for sure, the fall of all that ends up being... The buidoy, which the dust of life, the mm-hmm. children that were now unjustly born because
mm-hmm.
of his business, and how when they had to evacuate Saigon immediately, how many of them they left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them didn't even know they were pregnant.
And yes.
Now all these women are left fatherless and having to fend for themselves.
Yeah, it's a very tragic story, I think, precisely in that the characters who are the most honorable suffer the most.
Yeah.
In particular...
And they end up having to make the toughest decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And out of desperation, the main character being Kim does get into this. Her whole, for those who don't know, her whole family, her farm, everything has burned. She makes her way to the city and... ends up in prostitution, and there's a beautiful song that's painful. It's an awful song, but beautiful in the sense that she's like, I'll just close my eyes and be someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I will do my dance and make them drink. And it's so sad,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like, wow, this is, and it's, well, the sad part is she thinks this is her only answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And maybe in some ways that may be true, mm-hmm. may have been true, but I think perhaps not, right? And especially mm-hmm. today, if you're thinking the American dream, great. I think there are many opportunities to do things properly.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And gain, but to watch yourself in that, wow, okay, now what is my intention, which was originally survival,
has now, it now become something else?
It has now become yeah. something else. And it's mm-hmm. not just about survival. Okay, I want to thrive. And then you start thriving. And mm-hmm. then is that ever enough? Well, no, it's not going to be enough.
Well, in fact, the character that sings the song, I think he's a sort of comic character in the yeah. thing. But he's
the comic relief in a way.
But he's instructive in that at the start of the song, he actually tells his life story. And it's unspeakably tragic that he started out doing this basically for his own mother. Right. To survive.
Right.
But what that did to him is that what started out as this is what you have to do. There's another song he has where if you want to die in bed, follow my advice. Yeah. Where it seems to be about survival.
Yeah.
But in this song, you see it's about
he's
embraced this yeah. as a way of life. It's not yeah. just a necessary survival.
No.
He wants to go to America precisely because it's depraved and decadent, because he's embraced that.
Yeah, it's sad. He's like, yep, that's all there is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all right with that. Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, thanks for listening.
And join us next time.
Yes. Don't get depressed, guys.
Thanks for listening to the CamCam Books podcast. Follow us on Instagram @CamCamBooks.